The following is provided through the IAAIS Program Share Service.
Hello and welcome to this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman with the Virginia Voice. We continue with our article from last week from AtlasObscura.com. 10 literary cafes, pubs, and restaurants to feed your muse. The Horseshoe Came In On Saloon, Baltimore, Maryland, a 200-year-old bar with a cheeky name, claims to have served Edgar Allan Poe his final drink. The colonial-era building in Baltimore's Fells Point Historic District is rumored to have been one of Edgar Allan Poe's favorite drinking spots and claims to be the place where he took his last drink before he was found wandering the streets, was taken to the Washington Medical College, and died 4 days later. There's even a seat mark, Poe's last stop. It's been called the Horseshoe Came In On Saloon, locals just say the horse, since the 1970s. The inside has been modernized, but the building's exterior remains original. The building has been a continuously operating bar since 1775, making it the oldest in Baltimore and the only bar in Maryland that continued operating during Prohibition. The bar sits on the last street before the docks on the Patapsco River, and it's a short walk from where Poe first met and fell in love with Virginia Clemm, who died from tuberculosis in 1847. He'd since moved across town to Amity Street, where Poe House and Museum sit today. There is some controversy around the bar's claim to fame as Poe's last stop. According to the Baltimore Post-Examiner, it's not possible that the horse was Poe's final destination before he died. However, he was found just a few blocks away, and it's definitely possible he drank there at some point that day. Now it's a beloved dive bar that hosts live music most nights. But sometimes before locking up, the staff leaves a glass of whiskey out for the ghost of Edgar Allan Poe. The Eagle and Child, Oxford, England, which supposedly is now permanently closed. J.R.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, and other Inklings met at the Oxford pub to discuss the now legendary fantasy stories they were writing. During the 1930s, a small unofficial club was formed in the intellectual hub of Oxford University. Every week, a group gathered to drink a few beers and discuss the latest adventures in worlds inhabited by lions, wizards, and hobbits, which were slowly materializing from the fertile imaginations of its most famous members, J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. The group, called the Inklings, consisted of professors, thinkers, and writers who lived around the university town. Warren Lewis, C.S. Lewis's older brother and also a writer and an Inkling, wrote that, "Properly speaking, it was neither a club nor a literary society, though it partook of the nature of both. There were no rules, officers, agendas, or formal elections." Beginning in the 1930s, formal meetings were organized every Thursday evening at Lewis's university rooms, and more casual lunches were held at different local pubs, most frequently the Eagle and Child. Most Mondays or Tuesdays, the group gathered in the back room of the pub they referred to as the Bird and the Baby to discuss their own writing and other matters of the day. At this time, Lewis was crafting his space trilogy, comprising Out of the Silent Planet, Perelandra, and That Hideous Strength, and Tolkien was writing the Lord of the Rings series. The pub now sports pictures and prints related to these hugely popular books, and a plaque records the role it played in their creation. Harry's New York Bar, Paris, France. A favorite Paris bar for U.S. expats, including Gershwin, Hemingway, and James Bond. When Ian Fleming decided upon a favorite bar in Paris for James Bond, there was only one option for the discerning secret agent, the legendary Harry's New York Bar. As laid out in the 1960 short story, A View to a Kill, when in Paris, 007 invariably stuck to the same addresses. If he wanted a solid drink, he had it at Harry's Bar. By then, Harry's was already nearly 50 years old, and an institution for some of the most hard-drinking American expats in the City of Light. Located near the Opera and Paris's prestigious 2nd arrondissement, Harry's started as a bistro, which was purchased and converted into a bar by American jockey Todd Sloan, opening on Thanksgiving Day, 1911. Called simply the New York Bar, the actual wooden bar itself was imported from Manhattan, and a Scottish barman named Harry McElhone was hired to run the joint. In 1923, Harry bought the bar outright, added his name, and began to turn Harry's into one of Paris's most legendary watering holes. As American writers, artists, and sportsmen began to flock to Paris during the Jazz Age, Harry's New York Bar became a staple on the hard-drinking circuit. Its address, 5 Rue Daunou, was the bar's calling card, with advertisements in the international press running a tagline telling visitors to simply ask taxi drivers to head to 5 Rue Daunou. Those who followed the ad's directions included F. Scott Fitzgerald, Jack Dempsey, Thornton Wilder, and most famously, Ernest Hemingway. It was in the dark mahogany piano bar decorated with faded American college pennants that George Gershwin is said to have composed An American in Paris. Along with journalist O.O. McIntyre, Harry created a society for his illustrious guests, the International Barflies, whose aim was the serious business of drinking. Members had their own secret handshake and decorated their narrow silk ties with a tie clip featuring two friendly-looking, well-dressed flies. As well as being the adopted home of legendary expat drinkers, Harry's also claims to be the home of legendary drinks. Fernand Petiot is said to have invented the Bloody Mary there in 1921, although other accounts place the restorative cocktail's birthplace at Manhattan's 21 Club by George Jessel. Harry McElhone himself invented the French 75, a potent mix of champagne, gin, lemon juice, and sugar that Harry likened to being hit by a French 75mm artillery shell. His 1919 book, Harry's ABC of Mixing Cocktails, also included the equally strong Sidecar and White Lady. Today, Harry's remains a quaint, welcoming neighborhood bar, still run by the McElhone family. The current owner is Harry's grandson's widow, Isabel McElhone. With no televisions and the only music coming from George Gershwin's piano room downstairs, couples nestle together in what claims to be Europe's first cocktail bar, virtually unchanged and still serving up the same well-made drinks that made it a second home to Hemingway and Fitzgerald. And the international barflies are still going strong, just as they were the night James Bond said to his taxi driver, 5 Rue Daunou, beginning a memorable evening in Paris, culminating in the loss almost simultaneously of his virginity and his note case. Writer's Room at the Wicklow Heather, Glendalough, Ireland. A restaurant with an extensive Irish whiskey bar also has several first editions of famous work by Irish authors. Tucked away in a quaint bar in County Wicklow lies a room filled with special editions of many of the most famous works by Irish authors. Some say that Ireland's greatest contribution to arts and culture is its literature, and this exceptional collection certainly showcases the rich body of work created by Irish writers. First editions of Bram Stoker's Dracula and James Joyce's Ulysses, still in its original wrapping, are some of the crown jewels in a broad collection celebrating Irish authors, as well as poets and playwrights such as W.B. Yeats and Samuel Beckett. There's even an original program from the world premiere of Oscar Wilde's play, The Importance of Being Earnest. The room can be booked for parties of up to 80, but it is usually set up as a typical restaurant dining room. A small bar featuring a large variety of Irish whiskies is nestled in one of its corners. The Sherlock Holmes Museum, London, England. This London pub hides a peculiar secret, a recreation of the rooms shared at 221B Baker Street by Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. The Sherlock Holmes pub on Northumberland Avenue, near London's Charing Cross Station, is much like the countless other pubs in the capital. That is, until you venture upstairs, where, in the dining room, is a life-size copy of the apartment shared by Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Until 1957, the Sherlock Holmes pub was known as the Northumberland Arms, but then its owners had the fortune of acquiring an entire exhibit dedicated to the world's most famous detective that had been created for the 1951 Festival of Britain. Curated by the Westminster Library and sponsored by the Abbey National Building Society, the Holmes exhibit was as detailed as it was authentic. After the festival closed, the whole Holmes collection was installed in the pub, which was renamed in honor of its new fictional tenants on the upper floor. The recreated study of 221B Baker Street is, according to the pub, as it appeared on a crisp day in the years following the great detective's return to London in 1894. The rooms are decorated with the famous pipe, violin, and scientific equipment, while the wall is marked with a VR for Victoria Regina, made by Holmes's pistol shot. Plaster casts of some great bloodhound prepared by New Scotland Yard lie next to a snuffbox of old gold, with a great amethyst in the center, a gift from the King of Bohemia in connection with the Irene Adler papers. The attention to detail is remarkable, and the many screen and stage depictions of Holmes and Watson are represented with props and artwork. So lifelike is a representation of 221B Baker Street that it feels like you've stepped back into Conan Doyle's Victorian London. Café La Habana, Mexico City, Mexico. This old-school café is famous for serving coffee, chilaquiles, and the Cuban Revolution. Every revolutionary needs a signature drink. For Karl Marx, it was wine. For Thomas Jefferson, well, it was also wine. But as they sat in Mexico City plotting the Cuban Revolution, Fidel Castro and Ernesto Che Guevara preferred coffee. Legend has it, the pair met at Café La Habana on a weekly basis to sip cups of joe and plan their strategy for political and social reform. But to think that this cafe's claim to fame begins and ends with Castro and Guevara would be misleading, as it wasn't just the haunt of political revolutionaries, but also revolutionary writers. Some of the regulars who changed Latin American literature as we know it were known to sit for hours in the cafe, chain smoking and discussing their ideas. Since La Habana's opening in 1952, it's played host to Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Roberto Bolaño, and Octavio Paz. Crowds of journalists from nearby newspapers have also kept the conversation and coffee flowing. The cafe's fame among cultural greats has, in fact, become something of a trope. Today, Mexican politicians frequent the spot when they want some positive publicity. In the cafe's old-school interior, the scent of coffee mixes with the sound of conversation and the clank and sputter of espresso machines. It's easy to imagine how the place looked and smelled and felt in the 1950s. A little smokier, perhaps, but more or less the same. The walls remind patrons of this storied history, showing off black and white photographs of Mexico City and Havana, Cuba. The menu offers unfussy classics, including chilaquiles and coffee roasted and ground on site, brought by waiters so seasoned they may well have served che. While the chilaquiles and club sandwiches are pretty good, the food overall is average. But patrons should not come to the establishment to savor the food, but to sit, contemplate, have a strong Cafe Americano, and soak up its nearly 70 years of history. The Pirate's House, Savannah, Georgia. This kitschy tavern is also home to rare early editions of Treasure Island. A small plot of land, originally a botanical garden modeled after the Chelsea Botanical Garden in London, England, is now home to the Pirate's House, a Savannah restaurant, and one of the oldest standing buildings in Georgia. In 1734, a small building was built on the plot of land to house a gardener who worked there. But in 1753, as Savannah revealed itself to be a port town, it was decided the botanical garden was no longer needed, and this structure was the start of the Pirate House Inn, where it's rumored seamen and pirates alike drank and shared stories of their adventures at sea. The modern-day restaurant was established in the early 1950s and welcomes Savannians and tourists alike to enjoy an extensive Southern-inspired seafood menu, served by waitresses in full pirate garb in one of the 15 separate dining rooms. The atmosphere remains true to a pirate's inn, with maps, helms, flags, and skulls hanging on the walls, as well as some of the original dining sets protected in glass cases. The current owners like to say that Captain Flint, a pirate mentioned in the book Treasure Island by Robert Louis Stevenson, died in the upstairs bedroom, and that his ghost still haunts the building. Haunted or not, visitors can see rare early editions of the novel hanging on the walls of the captain's room and the treasure room. That was 10 literary cafes, pubs, and restaurants to feed your muse. Next, we'll look at beautiful and historic cafes around the world and the food that they serve. From lovefood.com, beautiful and historic cafes around the world, November 23rd, 2023. Timeless tea rooms. Cafes can be basic little hole-in-the-wall spots, or they can be gilded, glamorous beauties. The places on our list fall elegantly into the latter category, with decadent decor and opulent surroundings, matched only by the fancy cakes and fine china. Here are some of the world's most beautiful historic cafes, where each cup of tea or coffee comes with a slice of the past. Majestic Cafe, Porto, Portugal. Dating back to 1921, Cafe Majestic is a Belle Epoque gem with mirror-lined walls and opulent period features. People come here to soak up the charming, elegant ambiance with a coffee, more than for the food. There are some decent options if you are looking for something more substantial, though. With dishes like the huge Francesinha sandwich, stuffed with meats, cheese, and special sauce, and French toast served with dried fruit. Balzac's, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Balzac's Coffee Roasters has a number of fine cafes in Ontario, but it's the Distillery District branch that really impresses. Housed in an old pump house dating back to 1895, it's been gloriously transformed into a grand Parisian-style cafe, complete with a huge vaudeville-style chandelier with candlesticks. The cafe, with mezzanine seating, is known for great coffee, pastries, and people watching. New York Cafe, Budapest, Hungary. Considered by some to be the most beautiful cafe in the world, New York Cafe is an Italian Renaissance-style masterpiece. Opened in 1894, it was popular among writers and intellectuals, with newspapers edited in the upstairs gallery. It fell into disrepair after the Second World War and operated as Hungaria from the 1950s, until being restored to its former opulent glory and original name in 2006. Antico Cafe Greco, Rome, Italy. Antico Cafe Greco opened in 1760, making it Rome's oldest cafe. It's hosted luminaries from Casanova to Charles Dickens and William Buffalo Bill Cody, even swung by with his cowboy entourage back in 1890. Today, it retains a stately elegance, complete with waiting staff in a uniform of bow ties and pinafore aprons, and is a must-visit when in the city. Cafe Tortoni, Buenos Aires, Argentina. Cafe Tortoni dates back as far as 1858, and stepping through the door feels like being whisked to a Parisian coffee house. Not so surprising, given that it was founded by a French immigrant and inspired by the French capital's cafes. It's been visited by countless famous names, including writer Jorge Luis Borges, a sculpture of whom still sits at his regular table. It's also known for hot chocolate, churros, and evening tango performances. Crew Collective and Cafe, Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Once the Royal Bank of Canada, Crew Collective and Cafe is now a coffee shop and co-working space, though it retains its original splendor with vaulted ceilings, marble columns, elaborate chandeliers, and intricate tiling. The stunning building was built in the 1920s and is often used for special events such as weddings. The Apothecary, Rye, England. Cute and cozy, the Apothecary is housed in an 18th century building in the heart of the old town of Rye in Kent. Tables are surrounded by shelves of books and dark wood furniture, while the menu is also very classic, with traditional British tea time treats like Welsh rabbit, quiche, and freshly made cakes. Sally Lunn's, Bath, England. Nestled down one of Bath's cobbled streets, charming tea room Sally Lunn's dates back to 1482. And is where Baker Sally invented the Bath bun in the late 17th century. Her kitchen is now part of an on-site museum. Those famous buns are still the main menu event and made to the original recipe, with a texture and taste somewhere between a brioche and a burger bun. Angelina, Paris, France. There's plenty of historic cafes in Paris, and one of the most famous is the original Angelina, located on Rue de Rivoli. Coco Chanel was a regular at this patisserie, which opened in 1903, and you can request to sit at her table, number 45. The place is also known for its decadent hot chocolate, served with whipped cream on the side, and delicious desserts like the Mont Blanc, meringue, chestnut cream, and whipped cream. Cafe Haffa, Tangier, Morocco. Cafe Haffa, which was built in 1921, is a perfect spot to enjoy a relaxing glass of fresh mint tea. This pretty open-air cafe is a Tangier institution. Its terraces are staggered down the hillside, gazing across sea views. You can see Spain on a clear day. The pretty tables are topped with intricate mosaics, adding to the already abundant beauty of this breathtaking location. Cafe Florian, Venice, Italy. One of the oldest cafes in the world, Cafe Florian has been serving coffee, wine, and sweet treats since 1720. Set in the heart of Venice's buzzing St. Mark's Square, the bar was used as a makeshift hospital during the revolutions of 1848 and was also a regular haunt of legendary womanizer Casanova because it wasn't men only, a rarity in the 18th century. It's still wonderfully opulent with red velvet seats, frescoed ceilings, and gilded mirrors. Cafe Imperial, Prague, Czechia. Prague is home to plenty of fabulous pre-war cafes, and the Imperial is one of the most beautiful. This Art Nouveau jewel dates back to 1914 and still retains its ornate decorations, with Moorish-inspired pillars and walls covered with ceramic tiles. The place is famous for its hand-decorated cakes, and the Imperial, made with dates, is a must-try. It also serves salads, sandwiches, soups, and more substantial dishes such as wild salmon and beef tartare. The Russian Tea Room, New York City. Established in the late 1920s by members of the Russian Imperial Ballet, the Russian Tea Room has undergone numerous transformations over the past century. Today, it's still suitably glittering, glamorous, and wonderfully over the top. People head here for the very special afternoon tea featuring blinis and caviar, enjoyed in some of the most sumptuous surroundings in town. The Wolseley, London, England. The beautiful building that now houses this grand cafe-restaurant was built in 1921 as a prestigious car showroom, complete with marble pillars and archways, with Venetian and Florentine-inspired details. It retains the glamorous details, but now its brilliant breakfasts, lunches to linger over, and the most delectable afternoon teas that are on sale. The latter is a real event at the Wolseley, with delicate finger sandwiches, pretty cakes, perfect scones, and proper pots of tea. Groundwork, Los Angeles. The LA location of small chain Groundwork is housed in a North Hollywood historic train depot, which has been carefully restored into a bright and beautiful little space. The depot was built in the early 1890s and is a registered state historic landmark building. Groundwork kept most of the original features, including iron and brasswork on the roof and windows. Cafe Central, Vienna. Sigmund Freud and Leon Trotsky are among the most famous patrons of Cafe Central through the years. Established in 1876, it's still considered the grandest of Vienna's historic coffee shops and is one of the best places for fine pastries, from traditional apple strudel to the cafe's famous torte. There's also live piano music adding to the ambiance. That was beautiful and historic cafes around the world. That's all of our program for today. I'm Leah Blackman for the Virginia Voice. You can listen to this program on demand anytime at www.virginiavoice.org.